lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And a good evening to you, and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for show number 170. That's right.
Ooh, 170
shows, and we're still energetic about it here.
We're still here.
You know, at my age, that's something. Broadcasting you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, Canada. We're streaming live as well on the web at songtalk.ca/live-stream. Song Talk Radio is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about songwriting, of course. Brand new songwriters, we have established professionals, all kinds, and we share tips, techniques, and cool things that we find together. We all become a little bit better at writing songs. Tonight, we're going to try for three learnings,
three new things we learn.
Vanessa, if you'll keep track, that'll be great. I'm your host, Bruce Herrett, and joining me tonight, as always, the intrepid members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team, Mr. Phil Emery.
That's me, I'm very intrepid.
And filling in tonight for Neil Modi, we have over here Dave Miner.
Hello.
From Yamaha Music Canada. Yamaha Canada Music. Well, anyway, we'll get to that later. During the show, you can send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter, and we'll share them with the audience in real time. And you can stop by our website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on the show. Did we put the lyrics up or we didn't?
We did.
The lyrics are up on the website. Phil did. Phil deserves credit. He did that. So if you want to follow along when our guest sings with the lyrics, they're there. Follow the bouncing ball.
We should send bouncing balls out to all the listeners.
Oh, there they go. Never mind. Tonight, our guest is Patrick Ballantyne. Good evening, Patrick.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Good evening, guys and gal.
I have a little write-up here. I'm not going to say this is so beautifully written. I'm not going to say that I wrote it. If songs were grains of salt, Patrick Ballantyne is the salt shaker. I'm just letting that sink in. Songs appear to flow from Patrick Ballantyne effortlessly. A sought-after co-writer with cuts on over 10 albums and 2 solo albums of his own, his catalog is continually expanding. Playing it safe as a lawyer by day, Ballantyne reserves risk-taking for his music. And it's good. Your clients, it's good that they know that. never content to replicate, Patrick is innovative and experimental. He blends and bends genres while maintaining an emphasis on melody and lyric. His body of work spans multiple genres, yet every song contains a deeply personal and soulful aspect. And you folks will be the judge of that tonight. His 2015 sardonically titled endeavor, Hit a Month, showcased his breathtaking range, quote-unquote, and enabled him to expose his music in an immediate and intimate way. Well, maybe you can bring us up to speed. What was that Hit a Month showcase that you did?
Back in 2015, hello, everybody. Back in 2015, on a bit of a lark, which kind of means we got drunk over lunch and decided it would be fun to do this. We decided to aim to write and record and release one song, like one single a month.
A group of musicians.
It was me. I did
You.
A lot of it I did myself. Some of the songs I had help with the Oches or Lou Trottier helped me on some of the mixing or mastering. And Mark Planky in Windsor runs a studio called Shark Tank Productions that I used a lot. So they were all a part of it, but largely it was driven by me and Tara, my manager, and it all sort of came together when I asked Tara by telephone that drunken lunch hour if she wouldn't mind checking to see whether hitamonth.com was available, and it was.
Nice.
So we reserved it on the spot, and that was the end of it.
Now, was that hard to do? Because I mean, you're a lawyer, which I imagine takes a certain amount of work.
A couple hours a day.
At least. So is it hard to sort of do like one hit a month, you know, because you're not just writing the songs, you're recording it and releasing it.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, family and
were you thinking?
Showering?
I wasn't. Again, alcohol was involved. From a songwriting perspective, it was fabulous because it introduced a discipline that might not otherwise exist.
Yes.
How many months?
I can tell you right now, it doesn't exist currently, right? Because I don't have the same, deadlines that I'm faced with.
How many months did you do that, Patrick?
12 months.
Oh, it was a year.
Months. Wow.
So we did it for,
is that available online?
Oh, yeah. It's all up online. Although yes, they're all up online. So, and one of the months we did two songs. We did like a B side just because I think that was officially showing off.
But is it on hitamonth.com?
No, well, it's on iTunes and Google Play and all those places. So I don't know that it's identified right now as the Hit a Month stuff, but okay. I mean, there's a bunch of singles and those are the hits.
Patrick Ballantyne's singles. Check it out.
It's a month, yeah. Yeah. But right now we're actually assembling them and remastering them all because they're all recorded differently. Some are recorded live off the floor with the OJs. Others were recorded in my basement by myself. You know, it's just overdub. So we're trying to introduce some sort of sonic consistency, and I think the plan is to release them as a one album.
Did this mean that you basically spent no time with your family? Because it seems like it would have been pretty time intensive.
It was. I mean, working efficiently helps, and having a good team around you. I mean, I didn't do the artwork myself, for example. Right. I had others that I could, I'd identify a picture or something, perhaps, and I would ask them to finalize it. Oddly enough, I found some of that was the most difficult. The other part, the hard part, was publicity. Tara did yeoman's duty in trying to get some coverage, and we actually got quite a bit with a lot of the music blogs, and not just here, but I think one in the States, one in the UK.
Nice.
Wrote about it, and so it was. But you know, then there's always the follow up interview or question. So again, like any other project, the marketing is at least as important, if not more important, than the actual product.
What's Tara's last name?
I forget. No, Dunphy. Tara Dunphy.
You want to send a shout out to her?
Hi, Tara. How are you? Yes.
So she is your manager?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Well, she's been helping me out. I call her my manager up because it's not a full time thing, unfortunately for her. But it's she has helped me out for the last couple of years in getting some attention. It's easy to release a record or song a month or an album, but it's very difficult sometimes to get anybody to notice it.
Yeah. Oh, and then to buy it.
Nobody bought it. Nobody buys it.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
So you're not doing the legal work part time. That's your full time job.
I'm bread
and butter.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So these, when you say you're not writing anything particular now or not with much discipline, is that come and go with you? Like, sometimes it's spring and you go, I think I'll write a song, you sit down? Or
I was maybe being a bit glib. I'm always reaching for the guitar when I have a minute, but I mean, like Phil was saying, there's a there's a lot of competition for time in the house, and I suspect like most of people's houses, right? But I don't know how to turn it off, the music part, so I just, when I can, I grab the guitar and I try to work on something, and I have recording set up as at home, you know, like most do, so I can sort of keep track of ideas or work on them a little bit at a time when I can. So it's not like I'm not doing anything, but when you're doing one a month, that in that focused and deliberate a fashion, it was taxing.
Well, we had Alon Rodovinsky. What's he called now? His band?
Oh, Audio Insurgency.
Audio Insurgency.
Yes,
the young dude Alon Rodovinsky, right? And he's been a friend of ours through the meetup and then on the radio show. And he took a project, a song a day. He wrote a song a day, not recorded it, but wrote it. And he did, and he got to be a better songwriter.
You know, well, I think that's incredible. You know, it can be really good when you're working on your own to actually give yourself a deadline. Like, I'm going to put this onto a CD or I'm going to do a release. I did it once for Christmas.
Yeah.
And so at the end, I had to take, you know, a couple of weeks off of work and just, you know, plow through it. But I actually got stuff done. Whereas if you just, you know, kind of work on your stuff on your own a bit and you play with it and, you know, something else happens the next weekend, you just never get stuff done.
Well, it's good. I always like to get it as done as I can, but, you know, realizing that until it's released, and even after, really, I mean, because, five people are going to hear it if I release it. maybe six. You can continue to refine it and work on it. I mean, they're living things. They're never, in my mind, I'll bet you 25 cents Paul McCartney will listen to Sergeant Pepper's and think, oh, I wish I would have. I wish I would have done that. Yeah.
Well, he's told me that himself.
Has he? Yeah. Well, there you go. I never see these as, remorse, as complete. If there's always ways to improve it. There's always.
Well, it's the same with what did Picasso, one of those guys, said? You know, that thing is every child is a great artist. You have to tell them when to stop, right? So they do this, and then you just say, okay, you're done, right?
Yeah.
But so it's kind of. I don't know what I was talking about.
Well,
there,
my friend Gordy Johnson, who I've written with from Big Sugar, Gordy used to say, well, you know, if you're going to carve a chicken out of a block of wood, you just get a knife and cut away all the pieces of the wood that don't look like a chicken. I thought, well, that's...
Yeah, that's Michelangelo.
There you go.
So what I wanted to ask you about is, as the song you're going to do tonight, you're going to do two songs tonight.
All right.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit before you play the first song, Where Things Used to Be. When was it written? Was it recent? Are you saying it hasn't been recorded yet?
I have not recorded it in any real meaningful way. I've just, again, it's in a bit of a state of flux. But the idea of the song came from Tara. She said, oh, I got this great title for you, you know, Where Things Used to Be. I don't know whether that warrants a co-write. I don't know. There's something that you have
that's
to find
true.
Out.
Okay.
Call your lawyer.
Where maybe our listeners can join.
And I believe, although I'm not 100% sure, I believe it sort of stemmed from her trip back home to, she's from Halifax, area. So I think that's where that stemmed from. And I thought, well, that's just a great line. So I wrote a song on that, really about longing to be home, being tired and wanting to go home. What a unique idea for a song. But I thought, well, you know what? I with that phrase, it could kind of work. So that's
let's have a listen to it. So this is Patrick Ballantyne with his song, Where Things Used to Be.
It's in key of G for those playing along at home. I thought I'd come around and see about some things, maybe find a friendly face. It's been a while. Well, I've been up and down, see what living brings. Think I'm slowing down my pace, change my style. Well, shedding my skin for something new, and think of something else to do where things used to be. Maybe I'll find you. Well, am I running scared or running from the truth or lying to whoever cares? It isn't clear. Although I am aware, I've been playing fast and loose, loving things that really are not there, and they're nowhere near. Well, lose myself, erase my face. I'm still heading to the same old place where things used to be. Maybe I'll find you. And all my life, where I wanna be, and all tomorrow's in front of me. Hold my secret so tenderly in memories and dreams as I remember them. Thought I'd come around, the sun was coming up,
and gas was cheap, and am I still in love with you? Well, everybody knows I am, but nobody here gives a damn where things used to be. Maybe I'll find you where things used to be.
Beautiful. And that was Patrick Ballantyne singing his own song, Where Things Used to Be. You're listening to CJRU. And it's 12:08 a.m. in Toronto. What a gorgeous song.
Well, thank you. May I apologize to the CRTC for saying the word D-A?
Oh, no, that was
that
fine.
That one's okay?
I think
oh,
you can say dam.
I can say dam? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Because beaver dams are everywhere in this country.
That's
right?
What I was talking about, beaver dams.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, you know, beautiful, beautiful song. But I'm going to pass it over to you, Dave, to get your reactions. I've got mine, but I'll hang on to them for now.
Yeah, Dave.
What do you think, Dave?
I really like the song. I really like the arrangements to it. But I'd actually like to jump back half a conversation to where you discussed the discipline of doing all the songs in a row, having that year long cycle.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering, it's kind of a two-part question. Is there, over the course of developing that discipline and exercising those muscles so regularly, were there things you recognized that you were learning across the way that made learning or that made writing songs 11 and 12 easier than 1 and 2? Mm-hmm. And is there anything that manifests as you're, because these are new pieces, are you going back?
We're only allowed one question at a time on this show.
That's true. So
I've got the mic.
Give him the first one.
I'm drunk on my own power.
Okay.
I'm taking over
so
the
what
show.
What was the question?
I forget.
There were two. Did it get easier?
Did you learn?
Yeah. What did I learn as I was going along that made number 11 easier than number... Mm-hmm.
And it,
than
is number there two. Anything that as you were writing this song, did it trigger back to any of that? Has it changed your process in a permanent way?
No. What has changed my process and that I learned from that whole experience was I got better at recording.
Okay.
And in that, you know, without having to go back and relearn how to record tracks, and I'm not a very bright guy, so I would the learning curve for me to go back every couple of months or whatever, it's, sometimes there's that much of a gap. But when I was doing the song a month, I was like almost always in there. Right. So that was one thing that really helped, not necessarily in the songwriting process, but being better at recording did help me get more creative. Sometimes one or two of the songs I just turned inside out because I was sort of messing around with how I was recording it. And I thought, well, what if I did try this instead? You know,
it gave you the option, whereas otherwise you wouldn't have the option because you might want to do it, but you'd have no idea how to do it.
Well, no, that's right. Mm. I mean, and all the modern software, I mean, that's when you don't have a band in the room, you don't have other guys or gals that you're bouncing it off of. Sometimes the loops or whatever that a lot of the programs have will trigger things in your mind and sort of expand or send you in a direction that you might
so
not
So, Dave, what did you think,
go.
Like, coming right into the present on this song, like, what did you appreciate about this song, regardless of where the learning came from? Because you've always been a good songwriter, and this is just proof of further, it's a solid song to me. But, Dave, go.
I wanted to kind of nerd out on some of the guitar stuff. I was curious what chord you were playing under the Memories and Dreams as I...
That was so sweet. Yeah, you had some just really... tasty sort of little melodic changes and guitar changes. They
you
were
went
so
off-road
sweet.
In a really cool way.
You know, that's like, this is what I always wanted.
I went off-road.
This is what I always wanted the show to be. It's like, you know, we're talking about songwriting the way people talk about sports. Because you did that, and I was about to go, yeah.
Woo! That's what I was going to speak up to. It was right on the word dreams. What was that?
Deliberately on the word dreams.
What was that chord?
That was just an E-flat.
So it's just like in the midst of all that, but you're in G.
What was the normal phrase you were doing? Because that was definitely a different chord than what you played.
Well, so the keys in the song's in G. So the bridge was All My Life, B minor,
which is the third,
E minor. Where I want to be, the pretty standard C. All my rose to an E minor in front of me. Again, very simple, E minor. My secret to achieve, and believe, and breathe.
Oh, that is so
that's
sweet.
That's an E flat, though.
Tony Flat. Yeah.
That is tasty, man.
So yeah, it revolves around the G, but in different ways. Each time I do it, each line is a little bit different than the one before.
So how did you choose E flat as the chord to take it off road?
Where my hand went. Okay. Honest to God, it just happened to be where
just
my hand went.
Something wonky there.
Yeah.
Different.
That's great.
The bridge is beautiful.
Because what would that be? It's an E, because that's a seventh, though, isn't it?
Minor six?
No,
you're
playing, it wasn't a straight E, it was an E7,
E-flat.
E-flat?
E-flat.
Oh, wasn't it? It's not a seven?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just like a C. Well, I'm just playing a C position with the pinky up on the E string.
Yeah,
And then move it up four frets.
Oh, okay.
E flat. Okay.
Oh, we got a tweet in from Heather. Heavenly Bridge.
What's that?
Heavenly Bridge.
Heavenly
Bridge. Yeah,
there's a name for a song.
I'm going to cross the Heavenly
Bridge one day.
That's why I love, Patrick's work is so, it's so well crafted. You know, it's a short song, but it's like each line is carefully thought of, and I guess that's because you've been writing songs for a long time, so you're kind of really at the at the top.
No,
of your
you
game.
Can write bad songs for a long time. He's a good songwriter. You're a good songwriter. Just face it.
I loved Live in the bridge it. The All My Life Where I Want to Be Tomorrow's Front of Me, Keeping My Secrets So Tenderly, which I just love that those three really tight rhymes. That was just so
thank
sweet.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
For those for the kids out there listening to Rhyme Scheme, and one of the things is a lot of people just don't do rhyme. And Patrick does, obviously. What we got here, going here, is an ABABCCC. So we got things while bring style, new do you in the first verse, right? Truth clear, loose near, face place. And then you broke it up and you didn't put one there. You put B. What I really liked about the feel of the song was that you're back, for some reason, you're back somewhere in a hometown or something where things used to be. And there's something about, I don't know, I'm not going to try to describe the story, but there's this really wonderful feeling of lost love, missing something, and it's got this mood, but all my stories tell very clear, blunt songs about a person or a situation.
Yeah.
And I like that this is kind of ambiguous about where you are and all that, and I love that. And I also love that in your second verse, I like that actually. What I really like is there's very little repetition, because most pop songs are all about repetition. Mm. And this is something new for you every time. And it could even be a little longer. You could actually get away with an instrumental break and a bit of a repeating of these where things, maybe I'll find you where things used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a lovely thought. Who's you though? Is it the one that got away or the?
I don't.
You're not sure?
I don't really know. I mean, when I sing the song, I'm in two places. One, I'm in Dartmouth because I'm thinking of Tara, and the other one is I'm in Windsor, which is my hometown, and the nobody could give a damn line is just, in Windsor, nobody could give a damn, right? That's just, they are their own folks and suck it up,
I love
it. It's a song of longing, and it's longing and fatigue, and it comes from a place of being a little bit tired and wanting to go someplace where things were simpler, or at least in my mind, things were simpler.
What I loved is your last verse, again has lots of variations. It's not like you just repeated the first verse. There's your last four lines actually kind of go somewhere else musically, which is, I mean, the Police do that a lot, which I always thought was great. So I really appreciated that. I also love the fact that you have Where Things Used to Be, where I think most people would sort of use that as the end of a line, but you used that as the beginning of the line. Whereas Things Used to Be, Maybe I'll Find You.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting way of putting those two different sort of ideas together in sort of an unusual way, which still sounds naturally, but it's a very fresh way of approaching that lyric.
But Phil, then at the very end, he turned it right around and he said, maybe I'll find you where things used to be.
I know.
It's the final. So a nice turnaround, right? Subtle, but nice. So I also want to point out to our listeners that a beautiful thing you did. Could you just sing the first two lines for me? Because I want them to remember that with us.
I'd come around and see about some things. Maybe find a friendly face. It's been a while.
Right there. So you see what he did, kids, there. First of all, not much melody, not much melody. But then he did a big pause and a bit of a run on the guitar. You're waiting for it. Find a friendly face. Wait, wait, wait. It's been a while. And it was so natural to say it like that after a pause, right? Yeah. And I constantly talking about when people have some, what do they call it, a tacit or an opening or a breakdown or a pause, that it's another piece of lyric writing. Not writing a lyric, right? It's like in jazz, it's not what you play, what you don't play.
Yeah.
But I love that you're expecting the line to be completed in the rhythm that it started, and it stops. And then you did that lovely little rundown on the guitar. And it's
again,
been a while.
But again, it's an ambiguous line. It's been a while since I've been back, or it's been a while since I've seen a friendly face.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. But that, and it works. So those kind of little things. And I really like the fact that you started out with virtually no melody, and whether it was instinctive or planned, I don't know, because then when you went to melody later, it was a real treat. And then when you went really high, you did a lift on the bridge, right? Like bridges basically want to sound different from the rest of the song. So Patrick went way up, almost to his falsetto in terms of the top of his range, and then that beautiful funky chord there. I love the song. I want to hear it again.
Yeah,
well, but not now.
All right.
Later.
Yes.
Dave, anything else there? Anything else you loved about the song, or if you were to co-write, what would you do differently? Would you do anything differently?
No, I'm not the right person to ask that question because I'm. You know, listening to the way you write songs, you don't need me telling you how to do anything. And we were having a conversation about co-writing kind of before the program started. And I'm very lucky that I've got some friends that I work really well with. And part of that is familiarity. Part of that is kind of we speak a common musical language. Mm-hmm. And my guitar playing complements his songwritings, and even our voices fit together well when we're harmonizing. But that's not I think that's a very, like any relationship, you're very lucky to have that kind of rapport. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I don't think you can force two people into a musical situation. I don't have anything worthwhile to add this song because I'm not saying it needs anything. I'm definitely not the ingredient that it needs.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, we talked about collaboration. Phil, have you collaborated? You did with your band, right?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I pretty well collaborated my whole life in a band situation. And,
what's the benefit of that for the songwriting, do you think?
Oh, it's great. You can come in with like barely an idea, and the other guys turn it into something that's great.
Really?
Yeah, our Christmas song is like one bass line. And it's the guitarist who added all this other stuff, and people go, really? That's just one bass line? You know?
You brought the bass line.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote the bass line in the shower. And
did you have the bass in the shower?
That's kind of scary, isn't it? That's dangerous.
I do. It's
hey,
I'm
kids, don't do that at home. Hey, no playing the bass.
Yeah.
You can play it as long as it's not plugged in.
But I really enjoy it. It's you do have to let it go. You can't be too specific about what you want because you have to have faith in the other person that it's going to be different, but it will be better.
And over to Dave Minor.
For those just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM. And tonight our guest is Patrick Ballantyne. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have on May 9th, my good friend Stacey Daswell.
Yes.
She's invited me to play. I'm collaborating with her.
Ooh,
she's good.
She's
nice.
Invited me to play guitar for her at her CD release at the Painted Lady on June 15th.
June 15th.
Which is weird because I've told her I'm the worst good guitar player she knows.
Oh, okay. Are you coming into the studio for the show?
No. I don't know if she asks me.
Oh, okay.
But we'll see.
Well, Stacey, we'll see.
Stacey on May 9th. Mm-hmm. Allegedly... on May 16th, it's apparently all about the pre-chorus.
Now, well, why do you say that, David?
Because every time I've been here, I've said, coming up soon, we've got all about the pre-chorus. So do you guys just not like pre-choruses?
Well, it's kind of Neil's idea, and it's complicated. And,
I see. Yeah. I see. Okay. Yeah. So, all right.
I like
so,
pre-choruses.
Is that why Neil's not here right now?
No.
He's busy researching. Okay.
And on
May 23rd, Bob Wiseman. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Sunday, May 28th from 12 to 3 at the Transact Club. If you want to share a song, get there by 11:30 to get on the list. It's free to join on Meetup and free to attend the Songwriters Roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details.
And let's do a big shout out to all the roundtable participants. I know they listen to the show quite a bit, so don't forget, you guys, you can always send in your thoughts, and we'll, you know, because I know you know what you're doing, because you've been on the, you've been at the roundtable.
We should say hi to Mike McInnes, because we know he's listening.
Yes, hi, Mike. Mike, and Mike, actually, if you come, Mike makes cookies. So
oh,
that's good.
No, that's reason enough.
But I have a question for you, Bruce.
Yes.
You know what makes me happier than getting a letter from our listener?
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing makes me happy.
Well, read it then.
Well, we've got an email from
Rogerio,
one of our very dedicated members who've come out to the roundtable. And he says, top-notch website guys, I have two suggestions to add to the book list. One is Making Music Make Money by Eric
Biel. Patrick, read that
which,
one.
So Making Music Making Money, which I assume is some kind of science fiction, I guess, obviously.
Oh, no, it's a how-to book, Phil.
I would imagine so. And The Self-Promoting Musician by Peter Spellman. Keep up the great work. Best regards. Thanks very much. We'll definitely get those onto our resources page, and maybe we'll read them and talk about it during one of the shows.
Thank you, Rogerio.
The best way to make music and make money with music is to write a book about it.
That's probably true, actually.
It's true, you know. Well, you know, I think it's something we don't talk about here a lot about promoting your music and making money from it and gigs and that. But do any of you guys know? Because you're certainly Dave is out in the music world now, working for Yamaha. You're on the road and that. How do bands like indie bands make money now? Where is it? It's not records, right?
No, I would imagine a lot of it is ticket sales and merch, because those are things that you can't pirate. I'm always very happy when a band that I really love puts out. Actually, I'll give a shout out to there's a Welsh band I really love called Future of the Left, and there is a side project called Christian Fitness. So the first band is fairly well known, and the second band is a little more. I think you have to be a big fan of the first band to have discovered the second, but he puts out all of that music. It's the singer's basically solo project. Mm-hmm. And he puts it all out on Bandcamp, which I really like, because there is a suggested minimum donation. And for guys like me, I love that I can pay what it's worth to me and not just the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a good case to have faith in your fans, because they're the people who will love your music as much as you do.
And use Bandcamp.
Yeah.
So instead of going to a free subscription service, you'd purposely go to Bandcamp and listen, because you could give them a few bucks.
Yeah, if I were putting out my own material for some kind of commercial release, I'd definitely do it there, because I know I tend to, I'm lucky that I'm able to, you know, throw a few more bucks in.
Well, that's great. Are you on Bandcamp, Patrick?
I don't know.
Call Tara.
I'm on the,
could you get Tara on the phone? Now?
I'm I'm on the usual sites.
Yeah, the free ones.
But I don't know.
Virtually free.
Well,
Spotify, iTunes.
I have a lot of players.
I think you're on iTunes.
I'm a goof, but I actually subscribe to Apple Music.
It takes a long time to earn any money from.
Oh yeah, no, you don't. That's the thing. And I've actually had this conversation with an independent artist recently who has actually very very well known. Artist and is struggling with whether or not she should release her record digital, through streaming services, because the payback is so minuscule, certainly at this stage.
Right. Speaking of that, Kickstarter just signed its 25,000th musical Kickstarter campaign. And actually, musical projects are actually some of the most successful Kickstarter campaigns.
Yeah, Eric did
on
that.
Kickstarter.
Didn't Eric do that, or some other?
Yes, Eric Sorensen, who's been a guest host and still owes me a T-shirt. Eric.
Yeah, because you contributed.
I did. I gave
what,
my
did
money.
Did you use the Kickstarter brand, or was it another one?
Another
GoFundMe. There's another one.
It might have been GoFundMe. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's another way some people do.
Get the album paid for in advance.
In advance, yeah.
So at least you're not in debt, like I was after I recorded my album.
Well, do people use grants from the government anymore for that sort of stuff?
Yeah. You can still. There's still Factor. Yeah. And there's actually Factor and SoCan have programs for funding musicians. I mean, there's lots of people who are. Who are applying, so there's lots of
competition.
But Factor gave us a grant, not the Parkdale Hookers, but a band I was in. They gave us $10,000, I think.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, I'm really curious about your experience because it's probably similar to what a lot of songwriters might be experiencing, where it's not their day job. But you're clearly taking it very seriously. You're putting a lot of material out there. What avenues do you take to grow your audience?
I don't work that hard at it, honestly. And the results speak for themselves.
but you've had Tara helping you. She's doing some promotion.
Well, no, I do. Just do publicity and through music blogs and trying to get people to listen. But that will sort of raise your profile a little bit. Is it increasing sales? No. And I don't tour. I don't perform very often. Mm. And so I'm a bit of an odd duck. I really am a behind-the-scenes writer. I've worked with other artists who, and I was fortunate enough to do it when records were being purchased. Mm-hmm. And I've got, like, gold and platinum records on my wall.
It's back in the 80s?
Yeah. You know, 50,000, 100,000 sales, that's like, that doesn't happen nowadays. So, I got in and got it just in time if I wanted the hardware on the wall. Because I don't imagine that those are so easy to come by unless you're Shawn Mendes or somebody like that.
So do you have a YouTube channel?
I do, and I have,
Because sometimes people will maybe see it on YouTube and then go and buy it somewhere, or at least go to Spotify or iTunes and download it. Right?
I mean, definitely playing live. I think if you're really serious, actually touring and playing live, because if nothing else, you get exposed to more people, but also more people in the industry. And of course, the music industry is very much of a people industry.
Yeah.
So you need to meet lots of people, and that will actually help.
And word of mouth really kicks in as well.
It does.
Know, the more, you know, if you impress some people, they'll tell people, and the next time you come through, you know, hopefully you have a bigger, a bigger room. But and I would imagine, too, you were talking about merch, but also, I mean, if you can sell, you know, CDs actually at a gig. I mean, you're more likely to sell them there as you are.
Or vinyl.
Because
Dave's a big vinyl head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For those who don't know what merch is, you're talking about merchandise. So sometimes they'll make as much from the merchandise as they do from the tickets in big concerts. So in speaking engagements, they call it back of the room. If you're a speaker, like a keynote or something, you have back of the room and you make all your money at the back of the room, which is books and CDs and sign up for this and sign up for that and all that. Yeah. But merchandise is a great idea, even for a small band. I know Bay Shelter now has T-shirts and buttons, and I think it's a great idea.
In fact, if you actually go to the ParkdaleHookers.ca, you can still buy Parkdale Hooker merchandise. We actually had lunch boxes and T-shirts.
So Phil knows how to promote a band he's no longer with, or that no longer exists. But anyway, let's hear another song, because you brought one. It's called Plans.
Yes, I was.
Got any plans for the next few minutes?
I was just showing my Parkdale Hookers guitar picks.
We had picks, too.
Picks as well.
That was actually my Christmas gift to the band. Everyone got their own picks, and the drummer got his own
sticks.
Monograms.
Oh, that's
drumsticks.
Cute. Fancy.
The next song, I talked about earlier about taking all of the hits a month and sort of putting them on an album. This is the proverbial bonus track. That we're planning on and adding to the song. Although in the version that we recorded, there's harpsichords and mellotrons. And
you've recorded this?
Well,
a little.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a bit different, but this is how the song started off. And again, it's just
it's called
about
Plans.
Somebody pulling their, pulling their socks up and trying to get on with their life, you know, trying to get over their.
Do you remember what the process of writing the song was?
Let's talk about that after.
No, let's talk about it before.
Okay, let's talk about it before, then people can think about it.
Okay.
And he can put his capo on.
This song. Well, I struggled with it for a while. I had the idea of Plans. And it was meant ironically because my wife is a planner and I am not a planner. And so that's, you know, in the back of my mind, that was what was driving that. But, you know, on my last album, there was a song called Wrestling with the Devil, which is really about sort of wrestling with your demons and trying to overcome addictions and such. And I think this song comes from very much the same place as, you know, recognizing that you've got to pull yourself together. You can't, you know, live in the desert or you can't. You can't live in the desert and expect to thrive. You've got to, you know, do something meaningful and make some change. And the best way to do that is to make some plans.
All right.
So, anyway, that probably made absolutely no sense.
It will all become clear. Here's plans, Patrick Ballantyne.
How fast does it go? Key of A for those at home.
In California, there are dates in the trees, and in the desert breeze they thrive. I've dates on my calendar I'd never reprise. Yesterday is filled with lies.
Get ready for the pre-chorus.
It's time to book a page ahead, to sharpen up my pencil lead and make some plans. Find a way, take on the challenge, greet a better day. You gotta move straight ahead, you gotta do what you can to let bygones be bygones and make some plans. Admitting a problem ain't taking it on. No, it won't make it go away. So starting right now and until they're gone, I've many a change to make. Step one is see yourself as you are, or at least how you've been so far. Then make some plans, find a way, take on the challenge, greet a better day. You gotta look straight ahead, you gotta do what you can to let bygones be bygones and make some plans. I'll take some things with me, but I'm packing light. Most things I'll throw in the trash. So light me a candle, spark up a flame. Let's burn all this to ash. And a phoenix may rise from the flame. I have only myself to blame. If I don't make some plans, find a way, take on a challenge, greet a better day. Just move straight ahead, you gotta do what you can to let bygones be bygones. Make some plans. Make some plans.
All right, beautiful. That was Plans, Patrick Ballantyne on CJRU, 1280 AM, broadcasting from Toronto.
And it's Song Talk Radio.
The edited version.
Thank you for that. Actually, yes, there was a swear word.
Come back after 9.
Oh yes, but if you look at the lyrics on the website, don't look at it till after 9.
Don't look at it till
after
9.
That's right.
Phil, what do you think of the plans here?
Again, another carefully crafted song. I really love the your chord changes under. You know, it's time to flip a page ahead, to sharpen up my pencil lead. I thought that was really, really tasty. And a really unusual chorus, which, again, didn't go where I expected it to go, but worked really well. And this, you know, at first it was almost jarring the first time I heard it. But the second time I heard it, it was just catchy as hell, which is what you want, you know?
It's just the
melody.
Yeah, it's just it climbs in this sort of odd way, but it's just so tasty, you
that,
know.
That
it's,
is you asked where this, you know, about how the song evolved, and that was very much a what would Brian Wilson do?
Right.
You know, he would reach, he would lift, and so that's where that came from, because it would be easier to just go, you know, to a D or, you know, whatever, which is probably what I did the first time through. Or something, but, you know, by going up, it lifts you up a little bit.
That is so cool,
And given the subject matter, too, it's sort of, you know, you're trying to lift yourself up, and so it made sense to me.
That's great. Yeah, I love, you know, that's what I love about your work is that it's, and you talk about the process, is it, some people think that you just sort of do this stuff off, you know, people say, well, I just come up with it and that's the, you know, that's the song. Whereas I think when you actually become a master of the craft, and I think you're at the master level, is that you act like you don't actually just kind of do it off the cuff. There's actually thought. You're going, well, I did it, you know, the front, I did this, you know, the obvious way. Maybe that's not the best way, and you pushed yourself. There's real kind of conscious sort of looking at what you do, you know?
Well, I think you all know that when you're working on something, you know when it's right and when it needs work.
Yeah.
I mean, and so it's, I think it's obvious to most people that are writing songs. It's really easy to do something obvious, but, you know, and sometimes that makes sense in the context of the song, but other times I think you need to, you know, you want something more. You want it to stand out a little bit. So there you go. I mean, that's where a lot. It's funny. You were talking about the rhymes on the last song, and I'm thinking on this song too. There's a few, and it's interesting is how little I do actually think of that. How much of that just does, come out, or alliteration that just
some,
naturally
in
comes
some
out.
Songs.
Yeah,
and then others doesn't have it. Is that it, or does it always have some?
Most of my stuff anymore. What surprises me is the alliteration seems to happen naturally, or the internal rhyme.
But let me stop you there, because this is something that many, many masterful songwriters and lyricists say that comes out naturally. It comes out naturally because you've been writing for decades, right? I mean, the fact is, when you're really good at something, you don't have to think about a particularly really good combination of words, because you've been putting words together a long time, right?
Yeah.
So is it natural? Yeah. I think it's learned, practiced. You have some talent originally, right? But it should get easier to land the good stuff.
But
right?
I think I've confessed to this on the show before, and my one of my favorite tools for writing or co-writing when I'm working with somebody, especially when you hit a bit of a logjam, is the Rhyme Zone. I use Rhyme Zone online or on whatever.
Oh, wow.
Rhymezone.com. And you know what? You're looking for a word that rhymes with way. You know,
and
I could think of 30 of them, but they're all suck. They all suck, right? So, but you go to something like that, and it'll come up with a 3-syllable phrase that ends with way. Oh, that's great!
But there's the craft. That's not luck. That's the craft.
Yeah,
right?
That's the craft. But I'm like, it's not like you don't just sort of come up with these rhymes automatically. You have to look at it and think about it, and you actually examine the work, you know, from a real critical standpoint.
You want something that you don't want to just settle for the most obvious thing. You're looking for something that completes the song in a way that is more meaningful to you.
You've got a pun in here, and I was surprised by that, and I'm not sure it works, so I'm just ask you about that. Well, he's got dates in the trees, and then there's dates on his calendar, right? So it's kind of punny. It's a bit of a smile, but I wonder if it, you know, for me, it kind of took away from the seriousness of the song.
Yeah,
it's clever.
I let myself off the hook on that one because people have forgotten about it because it's the first line of the song.
But forgot.
That is the.
I didn't forget.
I know you wouldn't. that is. Yes.
It's not wrong.
No,
surprised me.
I
didn't say it was
hook.
Wrong.
I'm going to let
I
him off
I just said I was surprised.
When I read the line, I was wondering, like, the first line in California, there are dates in the trees. I wondered, like, is that a literal date? I was thinking, like, there's an ancient redwood, and you're it's down, and you're looking at the rings.
That's what he was thinking.
It's not about dates that you grow. And do they grow dates in California?
Yes, they do. I... And I visited there once, and I enjoyed the dates there, and that's always stuck in my head. And that phrase, it's a California, there's dates in the trees, has stuck in my brain for the longest
time. And you finally used it.
I was damned if I wasn't going to use that line. I'm just not sure, Bruce, to be honest with you, I'm just not sure that it belongs at the beginning of this song.
Yeah.
But that's where it's going to live, and I did it on purpose.
That's what I thought.
It's a happy choice.
There you go. The movement you need is on your shoulder. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, I forget if we talked about it in this conversation or in the preamble before the mics got turned on, but I think we were talking about in the first song, whether, you know, is it your story? What are you going back for or something? And I don't really want a specific literal narrative. I want room in a song for me to bring my own experience to it, so that it means I don't care what it means to the writer. I care what it means to me. But I just really like a personal touch like this, as opposed to giving me a narrative where I don't have any room to interpret it. But just the way you phrase that, like, you like that line, it reminds you of this thing. Like, that is, I think, a really great way to add a personal, you know, ornament to a song that connects it to the songwriter, but still leaves room for the listener.
And it's also got a philosophical piece here, because it's really taking stock of yourself, right? Like doing an inventory, they would say in AA, right? Doing an inventory. What's here anyway now? And what do I have to change to move forward and all that? Yeah. And I really liked it. One question I have is, I sing a bit, and I notice that you are very daring in hitting the top of your range in songs. And you probably didn't get a chance to warm up today, but you hit those notes beautifully. But you,
without water too.
I mean we're not allowed water in the studio. but do you do that on like, you're really up at the top of your range, right?
Yeah.
Do you do that on purpose, like to have that kind of
no
daring, or it's just instinctive?
No. I for me, it's that's where the melody went.
And you're not afraid to sing that high?
Well, no.
No.
No, no. Generally,
I would
not
be.
I mean, I've got a pretty high voice.
Yeah, well, you've got both. You've got a range.
I've got a decent, but I am stronger up high than I am down low, whereas I don't move enough air to really fill my low notes out to my ear, anyway. Mm. Live, if I was performing this, I might be, after playing six or seven songs, my voice might not be quite where it needs to be. You know, you adjust, you know, you can adjust.
Well, once the voice is warmed up.
Thank you for the compliment.
It's beautiful, because your range is quite spectacular, because you have this part where California, there are dates in the trees, and then it's way up here, and you're not even in falsetto, right? So it's beautiful.
And it's tough, I think, you know, for a songwriter, especially when you're just starting out, if you don't actually have a naturally huge range, that you can keep yourself stuck to the range where you do sing. And sometimes you almost need to force yourself to write for someone else who does have that range, so you can open up and you know, because part of this song works so well is because you do have that huge jump.
What I can recommend, kids, is go for vocal coaching. Every vocal coach I've ever had has forced me to increase the top of my range. They say, you can sing a D and an E. No, I can't. And then we do, and we've done all kinds of things, like if you hang your head upside down while you're going up the scale, it fools the brain, because what starts to happen is you're mentally psyching out, because you're going, well, I've seen it on the chart, right, on the staff, and that's a D, and I only go to a B sharp or something, you know, and it's a D, and then I've sung a G full voice, but that's because I warmed up and had support. Mm-hmm. And the reason every vocal coach has told me that, they expand your range at the top and the bottom, is so the middle will sound better. Because, you're using the instrument fully. It doesn't mean you have to always sing up there. But I was saying to I was watching a dude, we're going to have him on the show, actually. Can't remember his name at the moment, doesn't matter. And he had a live thing he was doing from Humber Radio, because he's launching a new CD, right? And you can't see this home, but he started, as he went for the high note, he started tilting his head up, up, up. And I sent him a note saying, don't do that. You close the throat that way.
Right.
And the song isn't on the ceiling anyway, right? So the thing to do is actually to bring your chin level as you go up, right? So that might be a thing. I saw you were reaching a bit up, and the cords were showing a bit on your throat. But to take it easy on yourself, bring your head down as you go up. It freaks out the mind, and you can still sound great.
But in this context, I mean, if I was doing that, it was because I could have hit that note without any problem if I would have sang much louder than you probably would want me to sing in this context. So I was sort of holding myself back a little bit.
Oh, okay.
That's one good vocal trick. Yeah. Well, there you go.
I love this line, admitting a problem ain't taking it on. It won't make it go away.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like that thing about, what is it they say, that understanding is not change.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah, sorry. And apologies are not amends. Like, yeah. Oh, sorry, I did that again the 100th time. Oh, I'm sorry again. No, I don't want to hear that anymore.
Yeah.
How about a change?
This is an interesting song because this is the first time I've heard you actually repeat a chorus fairly verbatim. Verbatim.
Ah. Yeah, twice. Two reviews.
There you go. And put a pre-chorus in.
Yes. Thank you for pointing that out.
A nice pre-chorus,
a little
too.
Preview of our pre-chorus show. A legend.
Well, that's why. Alleged. That was a show.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I think I hear the cowbell.
Oh, the band has kicked in.
Yeah.
Well, that means we're running out of time once again for the 170th time here on Song Talk. You know, and Neil and Phil and I decided when we started out, we're going to keep doing this till we don't want to anymore, and we still want to. So, and thanks to our listeners out there for listening tonight.
Thank you.
And thanks, Patrick Ballantyne, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure.
And a great co-host when he's a co-host, too.
He's been a co-host many times. And, He almost outshines Dave Miner here standing here tonight, filling in for Neil. Thank you, Dave Miner.
Thanks, Dave.
I have to be diplomatic. I'm a Libra. So send us your impressions via Twitter at Songtalk Radio, email feedback at songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube, Songtalk Radio, or stop by the site. Remember, websites, songtalk.ca, they still work. Also, subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes. Please give us a review. It helps our ratings. And we're also, you find that at songtalk.ca/iTunes. Don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter. One just came out. A great article by Neil about shaking up your songwriting.
It was a great one.
It was a great article. Songtalk.ca/resources. And what else do we have to say here? If you're in the Toronto area, please join our next songwriting roundtable meetup on Sunday, May 28th. 12 to 3 at the Transat Club. Free to join on Meetup site. Please join up there before you come so we know how many are coming. And it's free to attend. And if you're going to sign up to sing, perform a song, or play a song,
get
there at 11:30, 11:45. It fills up quickly.
It does.
We would like to thank CJRU 1280 AM for standing by us and supporting us. And as we sometimes say, we have shenanigans. But I don't think we've done many shenanigans lately.
Bit of horseplay.
And thank you, of course, to the home listener. Whether you're online now, listening live, or you're listening to a podcast on your own time, thanks for listening. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Phil at...
The Phil Emery.
Bruce at Bruce Harrett. Dave Miner at...
Dave Afonik.
And Patrick Ballantyne at...
Patrick Ballantyne at Twitter.
No, you don't say that part.
Oh.
Patrick Ballantyne.
PJR Ballantyne?
Oh, there you go. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Vanessa?
Sunny_Vanessa.
Yeah. Sunny_Vanessa.
And that's Ballantyne, Ballantyne. The proper spelling, as they do back home. Back in the homeland. What's the homeland for?
Oh, right.
Lebanon.
Lebanon, right. Okay. And please stop by. Please, isn't that a liquor, Valentine's? Is it spelled like that? Okay, it's before 9 o'clock. Anyway, please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you, too, could be a guest on our show. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thanks very much. Thanks for listening.